Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ko. So, I got a couple guitar bodies to build some projects out of, and I had a couple questions about how to do some things, because I'm not an expert at this stuff. I don't finish guitars. I poorly paint things and have some very mediocre results on past projects. So, I thought I would ask Mr. Jonathan Fellows of Fellows Guitars that Paul and I recently worked with on the F3 project, just some tips and tricks and some specific questions about grain filler versus sanding sealer, what those are for, what they do. And since I was asking those questions for me, and the general vibe is that everybody is working on projects at home right now because most of our country is stuck at home, I thought, well, let's just record this phone call and put it out for everybody else that may or may not need some finishing tips. If you have more questions, feel free to reach out to Jonathan. I didn't clear that with him ahead of time, but I'm sure he would be more than happy to talk to anybody that has questions about finishing. We also have so many other listeners and friends in this community that finish guitars, work on guitars, do repair work. So there's plenty of resources. Post questions up in the group. Reach out to the people specifically. This is a good time to get projects done. And this is going to be just I think it's about 30-minute long conversation with Jonathan. So I hope you enjoy.
Idea is that I got these projects now, right? Got those super sweet telly bodies that you cut up, and I'm going to make something out of them. And I was looking at the cedar body specifically. My plan there is to just do a nice Olympic white finish, kind of. I know I don't want it to be super shiny, brand new, glossy looking, but I do want it to be smooth and as nice as I can do in my garage. And I started thinking about everything I learned from the Luthiers podcast back in the day.
And, me too. I actually learned a lot there, believe it or not.
It was great. Now, probably the difference between you and I is that I was listening to it as just like an educational knowledge standpoint, and where you were probably listening to it with like hands-on.
I was listening to it like, oh, crap, that's how I got to do that. I got to go try that right now.
Yeah. And I just liked it for the, just to hear it. So,
for the drunk sister episode?
The drunk sister, all the drunk episodes. they were all.
Anyways.
Looking at this body, there's obviously like on the edge and side, there's open grain. Cedar seems to be very porous, I guess would be the right word.
Okay. So do you want to talk about that, or do you want to talk about grain filling and flattening and stuff in general?
Let's talk about grain filling and flattening in general, because it's going to apply to what I've got going on. Right?
Yeah. So there's a couple of, there's really two main kinds of wood as it relates to how you finish it, and that's a very much an oversimplification, but there's woods that are very porous. For example, if you think of like mahogany, you know, you see all those small pores. Walnut is that way. You know, you'll see it a lot of times in a natural finished piece of walnut. You can, even after it's finished, you can see all the open pores in the walnut. And then there's open poured woods like ash, right? Where it's open in a different sense. It's open in the sense that the grain pattern is softer wood than the wood around it, that doesn't have the heavy grain pattern. So when you sand it, you can never get it purely completely flat because parts of it are softer than others, right? So when you look at a piece of ash, you'll see indentations that exactly match where the grain pattern is in terms of the color. So either of those things are an obstacle to creating a perfectly flat finish. Now, other woods like maple, for example, maple is a closed grain wood. And so when you finish it, you don't have to do any grain filling because everything's completely full. Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So that one body is actually, it's Western red cedar, and that's why it's so light. And it's also very soft, right?
Okay.
You can feel that. Like you could dent it with your thumbnail if you pushed on it too hard. It's typically considered more of a closed grain wood, but it does have a little bit of that same aspect of the like what I mentioned with the ash, where, you know, some parts of the grain are a little bit softer than others. But the fact of the matter also is that I sent those to you essentially unsanded. Okay. So I ran them through my drum sander just to level them off, but I cut the shapes a long, long, long time ago. And that's why I was just kind of clearing them out, because I don't really build copies anymore.
Yeah.
So the edges, I think you can probably get that particular piece really close to being flat and smooth just by sanding it. Because the corners where the roundovers are and everything, there's no sanding that's been done to that. So however the router bit left it, with a lot of little tiny tear outs that are really small, that's not really tear out, but it is if you looked at it really like under a microscope.
Yeah.
A lot of that will come out just by sanding it. You can probably get there. And so you had asked me earlier about grain filling versus like sealing.
Yeah.
There's
got to be a difference, right?
There is, right? So sealing is just a coating that essentially seals the wood so that it won't absorb anymore and will essentially allow the next layers of finish to adhere and build, right? Because if it's like, if you're shooting on, you've tried to paint things that have end grain before, right? And end grain just soaks it up, right?
Yep.
Okay. So what sealing does is it closes everything up so that then you can start building finish evenly. Okay. And grain filling is actually something that's done specifically to level out any inconsistencies in the wood. So
grain or pores or something.
Like pores in the wood, like in walnut, or like you saw I did a couple of walnut ones with the F3s, right? So the process on those was I sealed it first, and then I grain filled it with a black grain filler because I wanted to highlight those pores black. It just adds to the how interesting the wood looks. And then you sand off the grain filler back to the sealer, and the grain filler remains in those little pores only. And then you start laying you can either put another coat of sealer over that to seal the grain filler, or you can just start putting your finish on. It kind of depends on what you're using. But either way, sometimes you grain fill before all of that. If you're you don't have to seal first, you can grain fill first. But usually that you want to seal it first just to keep grain filler from not going where you don't want it to go.
Okay.
Because then you can sand it back to that layer of sealer that's under there.
Okay. So sealer before filler?
Yeah.
I would have thought the opposite. Only that, so if you're using a filler, is it going to soak in too, or?
No, but it also depends on whether you're, to a certain extent, what kind of filler you're using and whether you're going to paint this body or whether you're going to finish it natural, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me give you an example with the black on the walnut, right? If you spread that black on the walnut, you'll never get all the black out of the brown. Like,
areas where it's not supposed to be, you mean?
Right, exactly. It'll stain that part of it because there's the dyes or whatever it is that's in the grain filler will stain those areas around it. And if you sand it so aggressively to get that out, by then you've opened up the pores again because the grain filler is softer than the wood, right?
Yeah.
So in that case, you know, that's why a lot of times you do that. Now, if I was just painting it, like if I had a funky piece of mahogany that I just was going to paint it up and make it a painted solid body, I'd probably just grain fill it straight up because it's faster, and then seal it with all that underneath because no one's ever going to see it.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and when you're going to paint over it, you can get away with a lot of things as far as that goes. Like, I've even used just like drywall mud, right?
Oh, really?
You know, like spackle. Because it's thin and it dries fast and you're just going to paint over it anyways. And by the time you're done, it's only going to be down in the little pores anyhow. But a lot, really what I, that, you know, that's not something that I would do necessarily today.
Yeah.
Because I have better things at my disposal. But for someone who's just doing a one-off, that can be, and you're going to paint it a solid color, that could be something you could totally do as long as you sand it pretty good so that you're not, like, painting large areas of drywall. But if you're just using it down, like, in the tiny pores, like, I don't know if I'd do it with ash where it's got, you know, big grooves, but if you've just got a little dent and you don't have any actual wood filler there, that would work.
Okay.
But, so there's a bunch of different grain fill products out there. Almost all of them are water-based. You just want to look at the product because most of the ones that you find today at Home Depot are made as a finish repairing tool. So that if you read the instructions, it'll say to put it on after the finish, if you're talking about wood filling products. And so mostly those things are actually marketed towards repairing dented and scratched furniture as opposed to finishing something that you're going to put a finish on.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of products that I use. For something like this, I use TimberMate, which is actually made in Australia, but you can get it on Amazon. You can get it at any of the woodworking stores. But it's a water-based grain filler that comes in a bunch of different colors, and it comes with you can even get a tint base. I just have a big can of tint base and a couple of basic colors like black, and then I can adjust the color if I'm really trying to match something using that tint base. Or, like in the case of paint-grade bodies, I would just use the tint base without any tint and just put it on, let it dry. It dries much harder than, like, drywall patch, but it's a water-based wood filler that doesn't shrink.
Okay. I've had problems with mixing different, not mixing in a bucket, but, like, using different types of product on something before and having bad reactions. Is that something I got to worry about with grain filler and sanding sealer?
No, you have to worry about it more with your sanding sealer and versus your paint.
Okay.
So, it's not such a big deal with, because like if you use that TimberMate or something like that, no, once it's dry, it's not a chemical really. It's made essentially, it's a wood based product, right? Wood and water paste that they make it doesn't react with anything.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about that. A bigger concern is that your sealer, if you use one, and your paint are compatible.
Gotcha.
So do you know what kind of paint you're planning to use on that at this point?
No, not at this point. I know that the best results I've had in the past of painting guitar bodies has been with automotive paint.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've just ordered spray cans on Amazon. And it just seems to work smooth and easy. So I imagine that that is not a lacquer anymore.
Some of them are.
Yeah.
Some of them are an acrylic lacquer. You know, you really just kind of look at them and see what they say that they're made of. You know, it's a little more expensive. The re-ranch products are good.
Okay.
That's a nitro in a spray can.
Yeah.
That's a really high quality product. They're a little pricey. They're like $15 a can plus shipping, I think, the last time I looked at it.
I think they're right around $15-$20 for most
of the colors. I think it depends on the color. You know, if you decide to go the spray paint route, let me put it this way. Lacquer, if you're using a lacquer-based product, you're going to get, it's easier to work with, but it's less durable.
Okay. That sounds like what I want. Except for the, I want it to be less durable, but I don't like the more work part. Because I do want it to wear, because I like the beat-up look, right?
Yeah. And so you and Paul, one of you or both of you, have had problems with like recoating with spray paint and stuff bubbling.
Yeah, we've both had issues with that in different.
You're cutting in and out just a bit, bud.
Yeah, well, we have both had that problem on different projects. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've seen that. Usually that problem is related to recoat time.
Oh, okay.
Meaning
well,
that
I am very impatient.
Well, the problem is actually usually that people wait too long, and that's when you get it. Like it says, recoat within 4 hours or after 24 hours. And frankly, if I miss 24, I'm probably going to go 48 because it's in that window that I've had problems with spray paint. I usually do it. I spray it. And then as soon as it's like not tacky, I'll spray it again, you know. And then I usually have pretty good results if I'm using paint at that point. And then if I need to do any sanding to clean it up, then I wait 2 days, sand it, and then spray a final coat. That's just been my experience. That usually if it says like recoat within 4 hours, if I wait 2 or 3 hours, I usually, like, something happens, man. It doesn't work right. And it really doesn't work good if you wait 6 or 8.
Okay. So, it's got to be right after it gets dry or way after.
Or after it's had a chance to almost completely cure, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, lacquer, on the other hand, you know, I mean, I did touch-ups on the S3 bodies, you know, from, in some cases, the same day, other cases a week later, other cases a month later. So, you know, lacquer, even colored lacquer, you know, doesn't really have that problem just because of the chemistry of the way lacquer works.
Right, because you can, I remember the term, like, you can burn it in or whatever.
Yeah, it's a solvent-based product, right? It's nitrocellulose dissolved in solvent. And so when you spray the next coat, the solvent in the new coat dissolves part of the coat below it, and the two coats meld into essentially one coat.
Okay.
That's why lacquer is so repairable. You can fix a ding in it very easily just by dropping a new fresh drop of lacquer, letting it cure, and then sanding it level and repolishing it.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, you know, I would go with that. I personally, lacquer, the other thing that's easy about lacquer is you don't have to wait 2 or 3 days to, like, sand out the orange peel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the time with lacquer, you know, if you want to sand out the orange peel and put a second coat, you can do that, you know, just a few hours after spraying the, you know, a coat.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just watch your sandpaper, because if it's too fresh, it'll load up really fast. You know, and if that happens, it's not a problem. You haven't messed it up yet. Just switch to fresher paper, wait a little bit longer.
Okay. Another question about my build specifically, because, you know, this will be helpful for other people, but I'm also selfish, and this is for me. So, like, on, like, the vintage, like, butterscotch finishes or the Olympic whites, like, sometimes you can see, like, you can see the green through it, right?
Sometimes,
if it's a good, you know, like a thin finish or whatever. Are they doing something to the grain to make that stand out more, or is that just happening?
It depends. On Fender ones, they're just, it just happens, right? I mean, the way that they do that, if that's what they're looking for, is that the lacquer, like, has, I don't want to use the word thinned out, but it's got less pigment in it, right?
Okay.
Like if you take like a quart of, you know, yellow or white paint, and you mix it with a quart of clear lacquer, right?
Yeah.
Color lacquer and clear lacquer, it doesn't lighten the shade. It just reduces the amount of it, right? It reduces, like, for example, if you took, let's use a better example. If you used pink, okay, or excuse me, black. If you use black and you add clear to it and spray it, it's not going to give you gray because there's less black. It's going to give you see-through black.
Okay.
Because there's just not as much pigment in it. And so envision the same thing, like with a butterscotch finish. It's got just more clear in that color coat than if they were trying to make it opaque.
Gotcha.
Right? And so, but if I was doing it, I would, like on an ash body, I would use a dark grain filler because I have to grain fill it anyways. And that would make it more likely to show through, and I can control how much it shows through by adjusting the number of coats of butterscotch I put on.
Yeah.
Right? Because if it's dark, if it's light grain, the grain's not very dark, you've got to get your butterscotch color perfect on the first or maybe the second coat, or else it'll be invisible, right?
Yeah,
you'll block it out. Yeah. But if you have that grain darker, then you've got a little bit more flexibility in how you can spray those color coats. You know, if you're not a pro and are doing it all the time, those guys are really good. I'm just a hack over here, so.
I am sub hack. So, all right.
Yeah, well,
I want to do a nice thin finish, and if I have grain that I can see through on this feeder one, cool. I mean, it's not like a super exciting grain pattern, but.
Well, it's really cool because it's a very tight, grain, and it's 100% quarter sawn, so your grain is all vertical. And it's all perfectly straight, and the rings are very thin, which is usually something that happens on much older trees, like old growth. This was reclaimed, but I don't have any idea on where or what or anything like that, so I have no clue if it's actually like old growth or not. I'm just saying it's a super tight grained, vertical grain cedar that actually, you know, it would look nice with a clear finish on it, but it's also soft, so it's likely to get dinged up. So,
yeah. Well, cool. Well, I'm going to put a very thin white finish on it. That's my plan anyway.
Yeah. And then in your case, you know, if you want it to be glossy, you're going to have to put a clear coat on it.
Right. You know? Yeah. Not a thick one, but I'll definitely do some sort of clear on it.
That's another place you just want to make sure that you have compatibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, you know, if wherever you get your color paint from, you want the same kind of clear coat.
Yes. Now, there was one time that I bought a spray can color, I don't know, Krylon or whatever, and I also bought a Krylon pottery glaze,
mm-hmm.
clear finish, because it was like, you know, it goes on thick and looks like glass. And I was like, oh, this is cool. It's the same brand. Should be fine. That is not fine. Mm-hmm. It like made spiderweb wrinkle finish almost all over the place and never got hard.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you want the clear version of the exact same thing.
Yeah. It doesn't just matter if it can't just be the same brand. It has to be the same thing. Yeah.
But, right, exactly. So if it's, you know, Krylon product X white, you want Krylon product X clear, you know. So, and they generally, in the spray paint, you know, categories, they generally have that. Even lacquer can be somewhat you know, it's hit and miss. A lot of times you can spray an acrylic lacquer over a nitro and it won't have a problem, but it's not true with every single case, you know.
Yeah.
On, I think you know the story. I was trying to do the red F3.
Mm-hmm.
I was originally planning to do that as like a candy,
yep.
You know, with like a transparent red over a gold undercoat. But I really just didn't want to mess with mixing the gold base coat myself. So I found some gold, metallic gold lacquer in a spray can.
Yeah.
And I sprayed it on there, and it looked like C-3PO guitar body.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I still have some of those pictures saved.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I put the red on it, and it looked cool. And then as the red dried, and, you know, when lacquer dries, it shrinks, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, it lifted everywhere that there was any kind of a corner because it stretched over it and it didn't stick.
Oh.
So the red paint didn't stick. It wasn't that it was incompatible. It just didn't adhere to. It didn't melt into it, if you will, dissolve into it.
Yeah.
And so it was a disaster. You know, and I had to strip it all the way back down and start over. And then I ended up just going solid red because it was a nice red color anyway. But even at that, those were, you know, it was a can of stuff that said lacquer. And then I was using more of a commercial grade nitro clear over it. Well, the red was a commercial grade nitro red, and it wasn't compatible. It didn't work. Yeah, that was... disappointing, to say the least.
But a lesson learned.
Oh yeah, exactly. I even did a test ahead of time, but I didn't do a full enough. Like, I did a test panel. I shot clear, or I shot gold, and I shot red over it, and it looked really good. But I didn't like shoot it like a whole guitar body with it, where I could see where it would react in the corners and cracks and all that stuff. And so the fact that it didn't adhere very well wasn't evident on my test panel. But, you know, I was mainly concerned with, A, it didn't crack and craze and shrink or do any of that kind of weird stuff, so I thought I was in the clear.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
Does that help?
Yeah, that's going to help me. I'll give the whole thing a good sanding and then see how much filling I need to do and go from there.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, one last thing. Just remember that if you want it to be nice and flat, you know, make sure that before your last coat, you've sanded it with like 400 grit to get rid of all the previous coats worth of orange peel, you know. So you don't, especially if you're using lacquer, unless you have a big glob or a run, you don't need to sand necessarily in between coats, especially if you're doing them like all the same day or at least all the same weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But you do want to wait long enough to sand with 400 before that last coat, get rid of all the previous orange peel. And then, you know, hopefully by then you have enough practice with that product to be able to lay down a nice, clean, final coat.
We'll see. We'll see how impatient I get.
You can still do all of that in one weekend, bud, if you're using lacquer.
All right. Well, then maybe I'll spring for the good stuff.
Well, and look around. There's some other stuff out there that's lacquer, too, you know.
They may even have something at Home Depot. I don't know.
You know, there's automotive lacquers and stuff out there. That's going to be better than spray paint, in my opinion.
Okay.
And that stuff you can get at the store too, but you know, it just depends on how serious you are about the project. You know, if it's worth an extra $20 to have it actually Olympic white instead of, you know, 1997 Chrysler, you know, Imperial White. Then,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. I'm not super picky, so.
Yeah. All right.
Cool. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Good luck, huh?
Oh yeah. Other than that, you guys doing good up there?
Yeah, we are. I still got a red F3 for sale if anyone wants it.
Oh, okay.
So that's still hanging out. I had to get that back from I had it for consignment in the local music store for about a week and a half before everything got shut down. So,
yeah.
So I've got that sitting here, and I've got a couple of other projects I'm working on, and, you know.
And you got a couple of strap bodies still?
I do. I have a, well, I wouldn't call them bodies. They're
blanks almost?
Almost. They're shape cut to strat. So if you wanted to build a strat out of swamp ash, I'll sell you this one that's already cut to shape but not routed for a lot less than what it would cost you to buy a blank to build a strat from.
There we go.
So, you know, but you still got to do 100% of the routing. I had a feeling these would be tough to move because anyone who's going to do all the routing has the ability to cut the shape. And so they may as well just do it all themselves rather than start with this. But,
well,
you know,
unless,
they're taking up space.
Unless somebody wants to do like one of those cool projects with everything surface mounted, you know.
Hey, you know what? It would make a good clock too, you know.
There you go.
Or I mean, at some point it's just going to become firewood, but I hate to see good swamp ash go to waste, but I'm not building another strat.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, let me know before you do that and I'll make art out of it.
Yeah, if anyone wants something like that, hit me up. I got a Purple Heart one too. It's super heavy, a little bit thin. Again, it's really pretty, you know, ideas that I had when I was just starting out and I got as far as cutting the shape of the body and routing it to the shape, but then got distracted with something more cool, you know?
Oh yeah.
You know how those go.
Absolutely.
You probably have a whole drawer.
Yeah. I've got a garage full of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep. And now I'm just like, I need to get these out of here. They're never going to turn into anything. There was one that was poplar. It was a poplar telly that had, it's probably 75% of the way done. And so I wrapped it up because I was routing telly stuff anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And sold that one real quick on the 60 Cycle Hum page.
Nice.
So, hey, okay, cool. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Jonathan.
All right, take care. Bye.
Bye.
Your eyes, fix your thoughts, gather feelings, place them in a box, and lay them down. With an open mind, open soul, let pride pass you by. Would you rock and roll? Set free. Yesterday, always dream of better days. Always see the better way. Impurity, you'll find. Impurity, you will find better days. Let pride pass you by, oh, rock and roll. was yesterday. Always dream of better days. Always see the better way. In purity you'll find, in purity you will find better days. Set free, be set free.